I'm so glad that you're joining us today. I'm Teresa Ader, and I get the privilege of overseeing our Grace Kids ministry here at Grace Community. And I have Molly with me, one of our directors in Lindale, or our director in Lindale.
Hello, everyone.
So glad that she is with me, and so glad that you're here today. We want to take just a minute and talk about fourth and fifth graders. And the phase that they're in. Fourth and fifth grade is a phase when friends are best friends. Games are for competition, and your confident kid will insist, "I've got this." Mm-hmm. Man, fourth and fifth grade, it's a good one. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that. And this class, will, like we say in all the phases, it's not going to tell you every single thing about your kid. Obviously, we don't know you and your child, but it will tell you a few things about them at this age and the phase that they're in. And the best way to utilize this class is to take what we tell you about fourth and fifth graders and then combine it with what you know is true about your own child, really to make the most of your parenting. We know that every parent is going to mess up. Uh-huh. We're going to fail. And we know that every parent wants to be a better parent. And so our desire is just to come alongside you, help give you some tools to do that, to be a better parent. No parent is perfect, but every parent is the perfect parent for their child. And the way that God designed the family is that even in your flaws, your parenting, practices, He is building character in you and in your child and developing them into who He has for them to be. So the lines between, some of the younger phases, we were talking just a minute ago about how it's crazy how all of these conversations are so important at every phase, and you can really tell they blur between ages and phases. But not as kids get older. So we're going to want to separate fourth and fifth grade phases and let's look at just fourth grade for just a minute.
Yeah, there's something magical about fourth grade.
Yeah.
Maybe magical isn't quite the right word, but it's very pivotal.
Yeah.
And there's been some research done that really shows that fourth grade is one of the most deciding times in a person's life.
Yeah.
And I'm super fascinated by that. They say if you ask adults to recall a memory from childhood, to reach back into like one of their earliest memories, they will most often tell you something that happened in fourth grade. And they say if you ask a grown man, what position did you play in fourth grade, they'll tell you. They'll have an answer. But the interesting thing is they didn't play positions in fourth grade. They played as a team.
Huh.
So whatever they say really shows the indication of how they felt about themselves and how they valued themselves in the team at the time. Mm. And I tried that on my husband. And sure enough, he's like, I was the whatever. I don't remember what he said now. But then as I kind of pushed him on, he's like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. We didn't. That wasn't my position, but that's where I felt I held the value.
Something interesting to me about that is when with my own kids, I can think back to their fourth grade teacher, and every single one of them, that fourth grade teacher played such a significant role in who they believed they were. So I know our oldest fourth grade teacher told him she believed he could be the president of the United States one day. She was a great teacher. She had a lot of faith in all of her students, but she made each one feel like they were the best. And Riley felt that way, and he really carried that with him all throughout his education years. That my teacher believed in me, and so I think that's really important and significant.
Yeah, it's a lasting memory.
So what kids believe about themselves in fourth grade really impacts them. And like I said, it leaves a lasting memory, like Molly just said. And so the troubling thing about fourth grade realization is that it comes with a whole lot of other questions.
Right. They were thinking, everyone's just like me. And now they're saying, hey, everybody's not just like me.
Yeah. And so unless a fourth grader hears consistent voices to reaffirm their value, they might become stuck in this struggle. They are wrestling with, am I good enough? And is everybody like me, or am I different and I'm not enough? So here's where you, the parent, come in. Now is your moment to get on their level, eye to eye, consistently communicating that there is nobody just like you, and that you are the way you are, and you should be that way, and it's good that you're that way. You're exactly the way that God made you. And it may seem like this isn't the face to emphasize your influence as a parent, because your, you know, fourth grader is probably spending a lot of time, and they're more independent, time alone and more dependent, time around their friends and their peers. They might be withdrawing or discovering that they enjoy time alone or working on a hobby or a skill. And it might seem like you're losing influence, or even uh-huh. like they don't want you to be around.
Right.
And I think this is such an important time to push in and uh-huh. press in. Don't be fooled. Your fourth grader needs you as much as ever right now.
Yeah, there's never going to be another year quite like this one. Mm-hmm. It's so important and pivotal. But let's talk about fifth grade, too. That's another sweet year, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah.
I mean, fifth graders are weird.
They are weird.
Maybe that's a little too strong, but I mean, when you think about it, they're super hard to understand sometimes. I mean, I remember, you know, they love you 1 minute and they ignore you the next.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they play with toys in their room and then they come out and ask for a cell phone.
Yeah.
It's very confusing, and they really crave your affirmation, but I mean, I'm sure you've experienced it
oh,
too.
Yeah,
you
horrified when you give it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Or what you do in public.
Yes.
Or, you know, I love you, Mom. I love you. You had a great morning together. And then you take them to school and walk in and.
Yeah, they don't acknowledge you.
No.
I remember as a fifth grader, my aunt came. I'm actually embarrassed to admit this. So my aunt came to eat lunch with me, and I didn't acknowledge her. And she actually left the school. We didn't eat lunch together because I was embarrassed. I don't remember why. I don't remember if it was what she was wearing or maybe what she said.
They don't know why.
Yeah. And they don't know why. And it's not because I didn't love her. And so I think, you know, it would be good for us to recognize that, you know, they're transitioning and
uh-huh.
changing and
hormonally and physically.
Yes. Yes. And so they're still a kid, but some days you get the smallest glimpses of what it might be like in the teenage years ahead.
Yeah. They're in between. They really are.
Yeah. And there's something about childhood that slowly slips away in this phase. You can't really put your finger on it, but there's this this maturity that's just under the surface, almost visible, but not quite yet. And so they're in transition. Their little bodies are changing physically. And like Molly said, hormonally, especially the girls.
Uh-huh.
Man, fifth grade was challenging for me and my girls. They're you know, wrestling with those hormones and not sure what to do with it.
Yeah.
And how it's all working. There's still many developments to come. Like they also, you know, they might be at the top of their elementary school. It's a lot smaller, uh-huh. but then they're facing going in to sixth grade. And so all of that makes for really a fun and interesting year.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because they really do need to experience both success and failure. That's the case with every phase, but especially, you know, fourth and fifth grade, because it's really going to set the tone for them. And it's a good
yeah.
time in their life when they're still protected. They still have us. They have relationship
yeah.
to really have their hand at some success.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing better than making
right.
a team or getting an A. But then it's so important, too, to fail and know that, you know what, that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time. It's
yeah.
not the last time. You're going to fail over and over, but it doesn't define who you are. But if somebody's not there
yeah.
Telling them that, then kids at this age are going to really be defined by,
yeah,
you know, what they perceive to be true.
They're hyper aware of themselves mm-hmm. and their peers, and they kind of stand on a tightrope balancing who they think they want to be with the person they believe everybody else wants them
mm-hmm.
to be. So positive attention from the right person can really make a difference and make their day, while critical remarks from a peer can really overturn their sense of fashion or musical preference, or, I mean, just in a matter of seconds, if they can be turned right away.
Yeah. They say, like, if you're like, what? You
yeah.
loved whatever the other day. Just look at their peers.
Yeah.
What's going on socially, and you'll probably see, oh, that's out. Now,
that's
you know,
now.
And now it's not important to them.
I think it's important to recognize every fifth grader needs to fail at something so they know what it takes to pick themselves up and keep going. As parents, this is so hard for us. We don't want to
uh-huh.
let our kids fail.
Yeah.
And yet it's so vital for their development and their character. And so nothing builds character and grit and perseverance like failure.
You know, fourth and fifth grade's a better time to fail than senior year
it
or
sure is.
25
yeah.
or 35
yeah.
in really big ways. So,
well, and the truth is they're going to fail in those ages, right? And so learning how to deal with
exactly.
that and learning that that failure propels excellence and propels growth, it's good. This is a developmental time to teach them that, because if we miss out and then they are in high school and they fail, it feels like their whole world crashes around them instead, rather than learning the lesson now and knowing that, hey, failure, it's how I grow. It's
yeah.
good for me.
Whatever influence you have right now in this transitional year pays out exponentially in the years ahead. So just a small course correction right now can literally redirect their future.
So you have 468 weeks with
Woo!
Your fourth grader, 416 with your fifth grader left.
Man, those are dwindling.
Yeah, remember we started with 936 weeks.
Yeah.
And we're halfway over. Actually, I think that's more than halfway over.
Yeah, halfway to graduation.
Yeah. And halfway to having a kid who can legally serve on jury duty.
No way.
Man. I know. I just had one of those. Our youngest boy just turned 18. And so, man, it goes so fast, guys. But the weeks ahead will move much more quickly than the first 468 did,
uh-huh.
right? And you're probably well aware of that they're growing up fast. And that's why every week counts. Each week might not feel completely significant, but we just want to take a minute to encourage you that what you do with your weeks counts. Every week is not going to be perfect. There may be weeks when you feel like surviving a sleepover or accomplishing, you know, subtraction fractions are going to be your best thing. And that's
For sure.
okay. It's okay. Just take a breath. Not every week has to be perfect. Like,
yeah.
we encourage you. And so.
And you only have 52 weeks with your fourth grader
yeah.
while they're in fourth grade.
That's right.
And then they're going to be in fifth grade, and you're never going to know them as a fourth grader again.
Man.
And the same thing with fifth grade. And if you look at it that way, you're not going to want to miss it. You're going to want to be present and
yeah.
Intentional.
And really, before you know it, your fourth or fifth grader is going to have a secret crush.
No.
They're going to have mood swings. They're probably already begging for a cell phone, but if you've managed to stay them off, mm-hmm. they're going to start. They're going to have a lower voice. Like their hormones are kicking into play. And so, man, this phase has remarkable potential.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the characteristics of a fourth and fifth grader. Friends matter more,
uh-huh.
right? It's not that they matter more than you. It's just that they matter more than you when it comes to advice on something.
They just don't care what you think.
They don't want to hear your voice.
I mean,
voice
they do,
as much.
But it doesn't seem like they do.
Yes, yeah. They're really concerned about what their peers are doing and saying and wearing. And you're not going to be as cool as you once were
uh-huh.
in your third grade phase.
Maybe never again.
Yeah, maybe
you
never
might kiss
again.
That goodbye.
And then competition. Competition is fun for them. They feel no fear.
Teresa, they have a lifetime of experience.
Absolutely.
And no fear. So yeah. really they can...
I love
they
it
can
when
do
kids
anything,
say, I've
you know?
Been doing this all my
I
life.
I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. They're skilled and smart and ready for the world to take notice.
Yeah. And competition is really how they like to show you that.
Yeah.
Like, of course they were saying it when they were 3 and 4 too. Watch me. Look at me. Look at me. They're not going to say it at this age, but they're going to say it in competition. They want you there. Seeing their accomplishments and supporting them and encouraging them and even their failures. That's an opportunity right there
yeah.
in competition and teams.
Absolutely.
For them to have failure and for us to be there to really help them and walk them through it
yeah.
in a godly way.
So fourth graders, they're top of the elementary school food chain, right? fifth
yep,
grade, too, depending
dogs.
On where you're at in school. But fifth graders frequently demonstrate clarity of mind that comes from knowing the ropes. Like they've been
uh-huh.
there and they're learning how things work and they're feeling confident about that. And it's lean into that confidence and build it. Let them know you see their potential.
Yeah, we don't have to knock them down.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they're not the best at everything, and they're not. But
But they get
encourage
that from
that.
They get that from everywhere, right? Everyone is, the world is trying to knock them down. And so our job as parents is to be an encourager, to lean into their confidence, let them know they have reason to be confident, that they're fearfully and wonderfully made, and they have some really unique abilities.
And remember, guys, like every one of these phases, God designed.
That's
he
right.
He built into every child where they're at and who they are at every phase.
Yeah.
And so,
so in fourth and fifth grade, encourage persistence over performance. What matters is how you practice something, right? Not just the performance itself. We know that even being on a team, the experience of the team really is what builds character. It's not the actual game or winning or losing, although that plays a part of it. It's the experience of being on the team and practicing and not the performance itself. So that's going to be something that you're going to want to pay attention to. Help them know they've got this. There's no such thing as an overconfident middle schooler. we've say in all of our phases class, every phase has a crisis that they're facing. They have a predictable crisis that they're facing, a question that they're asking, and a role for you as the parent to play. And we said in second and third, their crisis was school. And in fourth and fifth, that's still true. Their crisis is school.
But they're asking a different question. This time they're asking, do I have friends?
Yeah.
And you really help capture their heart when you help them develop friendships.
That's right. Remember, they're still thinking like a scientist, so they want to have challenges. They're motivated by fun, but you get the opportunity to help them with challenges and to coach their abilities to join in on group activities, to create friendships. You know, they're not able to drive, and so you arranging, you know, play dates, it can sound childish, but really not. You don't have to call them play dates.
Yeah.
Arranging times that they can really invest in friendships, develop friendships, and know that they have friends because they're asking that question, do I have friends?
So it could feel like it's driving you crazy. They always want to be somewhere. They always want to go somewhere. Yeah. And as a parent, that can get tiring. But when you think that this is an important phase for them and a way that we can encourage them, you know, it helps you grab the keys and...
that's right.
You know. Encourage that.
It's important for them to build those, and you have a voice at this stage and phase as to who their friendships are, who their friends are. So that's an important thing too, of knowing other families, working together to build that community and helping them have some really trusted friends that they can grow with.
And be that mom that is friendly and nice and has a snack waiting. I mean, it will be to your benefit to get to know your kids' friends and to make friends with them.
Yep. Cookies. Cookies, when you have some cookies or you have something to slice and bake, that's right. Something to feed them, they're going to sit at your kitchen counter and they'll talk as long as
you're
going to hear
all the things.
So create those friendships. You coach their moral abilities when you invite others to join in with them.
Okay, Teresa, there's four conversations that we've talked about that parents need to talk about over the next 416 weeks or so.
That's right.
And some conversations are going to be more important than others. I mean, you may still be talking about Star Wars and shark attacks and Justin Timberlake. I don't know. But what you say about those things is probably going to have less impact than what you say about health, sex, technology, or faith. And let's just mention healthy habits first.
Yeah, healthy habits are learning to strengthen your body through exercise and nutrition and self-advocacy, things that they're going to need to know, right? And they're continually learning.
Yeah, super important. I mean, it's getting a little easier because they are competitive. They are involved in sports and activities at school. And so some of those things are becoming natural rhythms. But we still have to encourage at home, you know, eating well and exercising often and really making that a routine. I mean, if it's hard for us as adults, even now still, then of course it's something that is going to take a conversation over and over and over again to instill in our kids. So, you know, take them on a run with you.
Yeah.
You know, you may really prefer your time alone, but hey, have your kids run with you.
Right.
That might end up being your favorite thing. maybe asking them, what would you like for dinner this week? Mm-hmm. And then having that conversation about, wow, that's a really great healthy choice. Or, hey, what do you think about if we substitute this for that? Mm-hmm. That might be, you know, a better balance. Really involve them. And then maybe even some of those other kind of conversations like, man, sometimes I wish magazines wouldn't touch up all the photos.
Yeah.
We never see real people.
Really
and
important.
Start, you know, opening up their mind to, hey, not everything you see is reality, because kids at this age start striving for this healthy thing in some unhealthy ways.
Right.
You know, maybe having an unhealthy body image or thinking not eating is going to be a good thing.
That's
you know, that all starts pretty early. So we just really need to be involved in the conversation.
Yeah. And asking things like, what have you heard about marijuana? You know, that can, then they might have not heard anything, but chances are you may find yourself in a conversation you're surprised to be in. And I think in having, being willing to have the awkward moments and ask the awkward things is going to be important to developing a deeper relationship and helping them develop healthy habits.
It says, oh, that's okay to talk about.
That's right. Yeah.
Otherwise, if we never bring it up, okay, that maybe that's taboo.
It's off limits. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Well, what about sex? Is that off limits?
Sexual integrity, sexual integrity is guarding our potential for intimacy through appropriate boundaries and mutual respect. And this year is going to be really a significant conversation that you have with them. Hopefully, you've already been having the conversations, but you're going to inform them a little bit more about how things work biologically, building social skills in regard to what we talk about, what we don't talk about. Your fifth grader may be less comfortable talking with you about sex than in previous years. Hopefully
not. But
you
know what? They're already talking to other people.
But
or
they're
being
definitely talking to other
to
people. Or being talked to.
Yeah,
that's right.
For sure.
And, you know, when you are able to have these conversations and not let them know that you're feeling as awkward as you're actually feeling, it's so important. And the less awkward you feel, the more comfortable they'll feel. Because it is, you know, it likely is going to be an awkward conversation. It's hard for us even as adults to talk about some of those intimate things, but they still need to know that you care enough about them to have the conversation.
Uh-huh.
They need to know that you're willing, that you're brave enough, and that it's important enough, and that they're valuable enough to talk about these things that are not fun to talk about.
Yeah, that it's not off limits.
It's not off limits.
That it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
That sex is very good and healthy.
That's right.
They're going to get that perspective from us.
Yeah, and saying things like, what have you heard about sex? And what do you think that means?
And even having that conversation about pornography, you know, we need to let them know how dangerous that is, because oftentimes society just makes it seem like, oh, it's normal. Everyone does it. But letting them know and having that conversation to say pornography is dangerous, because it often leads to an addiction, and that really limits your ability to enjoy sex later.
I think it's also important, Molly, to remember that our kids are not the exception. Right. The reality is that we can't shelter them from the world. Someone's going to define what sexy is. They're going to hear words that you don't want them to hear, or potentially see things that you don't want them to see. The hard truth is that we have little control over this. Middle school locker room is one of the raunchiest places to be, really, in, you know, because they're learning all of these things, and their brains don't have the capacity for self-control just yet.
They're wondering, you know, and some kids don't have anyone to talk to.
That's
so
right. Yeah,
they're going to ask each other.
And so do we want our kids to learn from a peer or the media or the photos that they're seeing in the locker room? Or do we want them to learn from us? And so we can't be afraid to have conversations that would spark unnecessary curiosity, because they're going to have that curiosity. It's all necessary. The important part is that we're being proactive and helping guide them in what happens. Something else to consider in regard to a healthy view of sexuality is this, that behind the sexual choices made by older kids and adolescents is the deeper issue of personal character that's learned at home. I think, take for example, the character modeled by a dad who is, you know, having road rage or yelling at about his coworkers, or a mom who's telling a white lie, or on the phone, or even in person. You might wonder how these examples apply to the development of healthy sexuality, but both examples demonstrate poor judgment and a lack of discipline, two qualities that are super needed in the days that when kids are navigating the waters of sexual temptation and adolescence. And gosh, we need a comprehensive theology of sexual integrity. Uh-huh. And that integrity starts in the home from the very beginning. So I think it's super important to look at this sexual intimacy way more than just the body and connection. Mm-hmm. But how are we building character and modeling character for our kids from the very beginning, so that when they are faced with those temptations, they aren't just making the choice because of right or wrong.
Right.
They're making the choice because they've learned it from the heart. And
yeah.
They've seen
what does God
modeled.
Say about sexuality? Yeah. And these are going to be, probably some very candid conversations.
For sure.
So be ready for that.
Yeah. Use real terms. Yeah, prepare yourself. Maybe practice saying what you want to say so that it doesn't feel so foreign when you actually say it. And remember that poker face. Don't be shocked by the things that they ask, because you want them to trust you with your reactions. You want them to trust you with the things that they are wondering about.
Yeah.
And if they don't trust that you're going to respond in a way that allows them to talk, that doesn't jump on them condemningly, then they're going to bring it to you. Another conversation to have is technology. Our kids are faced with technology, and clearly most fourth and fifth graders know way more than most adults know.
They are online.
They can get around everything we try to keep them from getting around.
Right. And now, most of them probably have phones, I would say.
Yeah.
And so they're not always with you anymore when they're using their technology. They're out of your view. So all the more reason for us to step up our game when it comes to conversations. Why don't you mention some of those apps, Teresa, that your family's used?
There's a lot of good apps that you can utilize to help you with this. One of the ones that we used with ours is called Our Pact, O-U-R, Pact. It's one word. And that gives you the capability. You download it on your phone. They download it on their phone to monitor their screen time. It actually turns it off. So we had it set for our teenager to turn off at 10 o'clock at night. Mm. It actually takes all the apps off their phone. So if they needed to call or text, in the event of an emergency, they could, but they have no apps. They can't play games. They can't engage on social media.
That's great.
And then in the morning, at whatever time we set it for, it puts them back on there. One of the things that they didn't love, because there is a free app, and then you can also pay for it. If you pay for it, you don't have to it doesn't rearrange their apps. When we first started out, when it puts them back on in the morning, it doesn't put them in the order that they were already set. So we went through a little phase where my daughter was like, I have to rearrange them every morning.
The problems of youth.
Yes, but that is a really good tool. Another one we used was Life 360, and that's really as they get older and are going places, which you're going to want your fourth and fifth graders to be going places. And so seeing where they're at, that they're where they are, they say they're going to be. And once they start driving, it'll let you know if they're using their phone, what they're driving, how fast they're driving, and all of those things. So there's a lot of tools that you can utilize. Those are a couple of them. We would love, if you want more, email us, call us, text us. We'd love to work on that with you. But say things like, let's do this together. And I trust you, but I don't trust the 800 million people that are on the internet. There's some pretty eye-opening YouTube videos that researchers have done just in regard to social media with our kids and predators. And so helping them become aware of that, having a continual conversation of, it's not that I don't trust you, but there are people out there that are seeking to harm you.
Yeah, it's vital.
And it's vital that they know. Yeah, helping them figure out what a healthy time online is, screen time boundaries. Each family is going to have to decide that for themselves. And one family having, 30 minutes as opposed to one having 3 hours, not one is bad or good. Every family does it a little bit different. And I think we have to be careful to help our kids empathize with other families and not condemn other families or
or respect their choices.
Respect their choices, but also as a family, move forward in your own choices. The last conversation I think we think that is really important to have is a one of authentic faith. And this is one that we hope that you have been having from the time they're little all the way up. We hope that you're modeling an authentic faith for them and that they're growing in their faith.
Mm-hmm. Kids at this age are starting to move into abstract thinking.
Yeah.
And so they're thinking about God in a different way. They're seeing Him in a different way. They're thinking more and formulating ideas and values.
Yeah.
So it's very transitional.
Yeah. And remember, this is a phase that friendships matter more. And so your child's faith community matters because you're going to want to give them opportunity to talk about their faith with their friends, since those are the people that are really important to them.
It's also an age where they're getting ready to join the church's youth program.
Yeah.
And that can be really intimidating too.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of kids, fifth grade, you know, they have so much confidence.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they want to do that. But man, who's in the room and what's it going to be like? And am I going to measure up?
Yeah.
And am I going to have friends there? And so it's really a great time for us to come alongside, to really be praying for them.
Yeah. To look for opportunities for connection, to prioritize church connections.
Yes.
And friendships. And continue having those faith conversations. You know, say things like, how can I pray for you today or this week? What are you struggling with? What do you think is the wisest choice in this situation? Helping them have a voice and learning that they can begin to make their own decisions and choices in regard to their faith, and helping them understand that they're the owner of it. It's not your faith that they are getting to piggyback on. It's their faith, and they have a choice and a decision to make.
You know, this is really an exciting time because you really can see their faith blossom, and
you really can
see them take it as their own, and I so enjoyed that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet time.
Super sweet time. We just want to encourage you to, like I said, pray with your kids, pray for your kids, model prayer, let them hear you praying, not just at the dinner table, but when you sit down, you know, they're going to bed, pray together. Or when you first get up in the morning, if you're reading your Bible and they wake up, invite them to join with you and pray so that they hear you praying. They're going to learn how to pray by hearing people pray. And you are the biggest spiritual influence for your child. So we just want to encourage you to continue to have that conversation with them.
You know, let me just say one other thing briefly. You know, we were saying it's a transitional time, so they're a little confused about even what they want and how they feel. And I think one thing we experienced in this phase was our kids pushing back on, I don't want to go to church, or can't we sleep in? So-and-so doesn't have to go to church.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's not the time to give in. It's not the time to let your child take the lead. But you need to stay engaged and take the lead and push through some of these things that are uncomfortable, because you're going to really reap the benefits
for sure
later, I think, over time.
Yeah, they want the boundaries. They don't always tangibly recognize that they want the boundaries, but they want the boundaries. They're safest when they don't have blurry jello lines, right? But you call the shots, you make the decisions, and they don't get to dictate how things happen at home. And so that I think that's one of them is we go to church as a family, and we don't stay in bed just because we're tired or because someone else's family's not going. Okay, well, there's six things that we think that every kid needs, and so we're going to talk about those six things. I want to mention them first briefly, and then we'll kind of break them down a little bit. But every child needs love and stories and work and fun and tribes and words over time. All of these things are things that are really vital to their development, their confidence, their character. And so let's start with love. Every child needs love over time to give them a sense of self-worth.
Yeah, it's so important just to always be letting them know how valuable they are.
That's
what
right.
an important part of the family they are, how Jesus loves them.
Yeah, and we can show them love by showing interest and curiosity about their activities, what they're doing, what they enjoy doing. Letting them know that's valuable to you too. Encouraging their efforts and letting them know that you're going to show up, helping them push through setbacks and engaging their interests. When you do these things over time, they're going to know they're valuable to you, and that's going to show them love over time. It's going to build their self-worth.
Mm-hmm. And you just got to say it. Say it, say it, say mm-hmm. it. I love you. I love you. All the time.
Yeah, I think that's
something they can't hear it too much.
They can't hear too much. I think we underestimate the power of that uh-huh. phrase. And we assume that showing them, which we do want to show them with our actions, but telling them with our words, I think is important as well. It's a good uh-huh. point. Yeah. Every child needs stories over time to give them a bigger perspective. You know, from the very beginning of time, we kind of show them with our actions and teach them that it's all about them. We feed them, we clothe them, we help them sleep, we get them up, we, you know, take them from place to place. Everything we do revolves around their world. And so an important thing to help them understand a bigger picture and a bigger perspective is stories. And they can have stories, lots of different stories, right? Stories about them as a baby. One of my favorite things to do is on their birthday, tell their birth story. Stories about their family or their siblings or you as a child.
Yeah, they might want to hear about what happened to you in fifth grade.
That's right. Yeah. Who was your favorite teacher or your best friend? Stories about your parents and grandparents. And
you know, the Bible's a big story.
Absolutely.
Lots of stories.
Yeah. Yeah, it grows. And even stories, you know, of life or books that you loved reading as a child. Molly, I'm sure you have some favorites or some that are age appropriate.
Well, I have a list here. I'll just read a few of them, like Number the Stars, The Chronicles of Narnia. That's a family favorite.
We read
for
that
us.
Together out loud.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Hatchet.
Never heard of that one.
The Wheel on the School. I remember that one.
Okay. Yeah. So reading stories, even out loud together as mm-hmm. a family, my husband would sit and read to us when we were in this phase, and my kids loved it, and they would engage. They would listen.
Yeah. And what did that story mean to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, who did you relate to? Which character?
Yeah. And how do you think it relates to, you know, something that's happening
life.
In the world today?
Mm-hmm.
Life today. So stories over time give them a bigger perspective and work over time. Every kid needs work over time to give them significance. What work can they do? How are they a part of the family?
I mean, I'm sure you love hearing that because
yeah, exactly.
we all need our kids to work.
Yeah. I was supposed to leave a list for mine this morning, actually.
But yeah, I mean, they absolutely, there's work they can do. And you know your kid. And so you know what they can and cannot do, but maybe some of the things are take care of pets.
Yeah.
You know, they can do their homework. They can plant sit or pet sit for neighbors,
That's
you know,
right.
as a blessing or even for money.
Yeah.
They can put away groceries. You may have to, you know, try to find all your stuff later, but let them try. Let them do it. Let
yes.
them practice. You know, let them, they're not going to do all their things perfect, of
yeah.
course, but
I remember getting frustrated about not knowing where all the dishes are. And finally I realized I'm just happy they're putting them away. So
yeah.
it's okay if they're in a different spot once or twice.
Yeah.
But that work is important for them. Don't be afraid to give them chores, to help them know that they are part of the family, that it takes all of us to run the household.
Yeah.
That's good for them. It gives them significance.
Reading to younger children can be a job, can be a chore,
yeah.
can be work for them, or changing their bed sheets in their bed and cleaning
yeah.
their room.
Yeah. And a bonding time too.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of bonding, every child needs fun over time to give Woo-hoo. Them connection. So play games together,
uh-huh.
do activities, have fun. A fun in a child's mind is really super valuable and important. What it does is creates a bond.
Yeah.
It creates connection. It creates memories in your family. It's part of what makes your family important and valuable to
yeah.
them.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. expensive.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to take the whole day. It can be simple.
Yeah. It can be. It can be simple games you play. Or
are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Yeah.
You might not be.
You might not be. Taking walks together in the neighborhood, things that, or racing
uh-huh.
them. They love to, you know, have competition. And so racing them, seeing you run.
Community theater.
Yeah.
Ballet.
Lots of ropes course activities,
uh-huh.
You know, making jewelry together, going to local museums, all of those things. Whatever your child finds fun, make it a priority
uh-huh.
and spend time helping them know that they're valuable. What they enjoy is valuable, and you're going to enjoy it with them because fun over time gives them connection. Another thing that they need is tribes. Tribes over time gives your child a sense of belonging. So they need all the people,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
this will help. There's going to come a time, and you're approaching it if you're not already there, that they don't want to hear your voice. They're not listening as clearly to what you're saying. They're listening to the people around.
Wah, wah, wah.
Exactly, like the Charlie Brown teacher. And so what's going to be so important is you building people in their life that they can trust, that are saying the same things that you're saying. People like coaches and teachers and small group leaders and, you know, your neighbors or your best friends, people that you trust, that you know are saying the same things that you're saying, so that they have a sense of belonging. They know they have people, right? And every child needs words over time to give them direction.
Yeah, so important. I mean, we speak life over our kids with the things we say. We set the direction for the day, perhaps, or the crisis, or things that are happening. Our attitude, you know, my husband and I used to travel quite a bit and take mission trips. And, you know, we noticed if we had a little bad attitude about the place we were staying or the conditions, then they did. But if we were like, hey, this is fine, we're good, what an opportunity, then they came right along and had that same attitude. So it's so important. And some of the words we can say, you know, I think we need to ask, do you want a hug?
Yeah.
You know, hey, you're so handsome or beautiful. I'm sorry. That's an important one to say.
Yeah.
You know, they really need to hear that. So they learn how to communicate that to their friends.
Right. And that it doesn't make you weak to say, I'm sorry, or to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
But that it actually makes you stronger. But they need to hear those words.
Yeah. And what about saying, tell me more?
Absolutely.
I mean, I do have a child. I mean, he's a grown man now, but he could weave a tale, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes the last thing I wanted to say was, tell me more, because he would.
Absolutely.
But you know what? That was the bonding time. That was saying, hey, your ideas are important.
Yeah. Another thing one of my friends challenged me with recently is to say the last three words of the conversation. Mm. Just repeat those words and they'll keep talking. And it's really incredible that actually really works. So if they say, you know, oh, my teacher made me so mad today. Your teacher made you mad today? And then they expand on it and they don't feel like you're doing 20 questions
because
they don't want 20 questions.
Right.
They want to offer information if they decide to offer it. And so just saying those last three words makes a difference, helps them talk. But words over time give them a sense of direction. You know, the truth is the rhythm that you create in your home shapes the value and the character of your home. And so all of these things that are so important, these conversations that you know, the four conversations that are vital to have, the six things that every kid needs over time, all of those things are shaping the value and the rhythm of your home. Okay, so there's four rhythms that really are a good launching point for conversations. And you know, the Bible actually talks about those rhythms. And in Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 8, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your strength. These commands that I'm giving you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, bind them on your foreheads, write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." And so these rhythms, this walking along the road, when you lie down and when you get up, these are all natural rhythms that we can capitalize on to shape the values of our home.
Right. So the first one is morning time. You can really be a coach and take advantage of that time you have in the morning to really set the tone for the day and connect with your child. Tell them what you expect of them, how you expect them to navigate through their day. And you're going to really
instill purpose
in them as they leave the house. And then drive time. I mean, how many zillion million hours do you spend in the car?
Lots
driving
of driving
your
time.
Kids around.
Practice.
And just being
school.
Together. So it's just a great time to listen to the conversations they're having with their friends, but then to engage in the conversation. Why not just, you know, see if we can get...
It's a good time to be a friend.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then mealtime, we all have to eat.
That's right.
Mealtimes together are super important. If you can, the more you can do that, I think your family will really benefit from it. But
we always did the highs and lows.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And they loved that. And so it's good launching points, little tools like that to help just shape established values and intentional conversations while you eat together.
Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of times bedtime is just that quiet time when, you know, we're just resting and winding down and the lights are low, mm-hmm. and just having that conversation with them and, yeah. and maybe blessing them and talking through their day and loving on them a little bit.
Yeah, that bedtime routine, it's really tempting not to take advantage of it, but it's really, really crucial time to, even if you take 10, 20, or, you know, ideally 30 minutes, but they will talk to you. They will open up when it's dark and it's not threatening and you're not staring at them or, you know, quizzing them.
Yeah.
Be a counselor and strengthen your relationship through heart conversations at the end of the day, because they will open up.
Yeah. And if you miss it, they'll be like, "Mom, aren't you coming in?"
Yeah. They want that.
And you'll
time.
Be like, "Oh."
It's going to feel like they want to push you away. But really, they're craving your attention and they want you to push back. So those are some rhythms that we hope that you capitalize on that really can making small incremental changes, like saying, okay, I'm going to commit to 10 minutes at bedtime, you know, every other night. That's a small change, but it can really impact your family over time and shape the value of your home and your character over time. You know, this is a good time to talk about parental influence.
For sure. I mean, parents start off with low relational influence and high positional influence, you know, which is another way of saying, you know, you're in charge of a mini human who poops 10 times a day, but has really extraordinary potential.
Right.
You know, so really we all have one goal. We're supposed to lessen that positional authority and build the relationship.
And that happens naturally, right? I mean, naturally, you have so much positional influence when they're little because you have to.
Yeah.
They can't depend on themselves.
Yes. Everything.
Yeah. And as that grows, your positional influence lessens. Once they go to elementary school and when they go to middle school, your hours are going to diminish of positional influence. And so it would be vital to increase the relational influence that you have over them.
You know, Teresa, it's really startling when you look at it. I mean, I think we know that, but when you really look at the hours, it kind of shakes you. You have 12 hours a day with a preschooler, but with an elementary kid, you only have 6 hours a day.
Yeah, it cuts it right in half.
4 hours a day with a middle schooler. Mm-hmm. And then when they're in high school, says 2 hours, but I mean, I think you're lucky if you have two hours.
You are. I mean, I have two high schoolers right now, and I am lucky if I get 2 hours with them a
day. So it's not quantity of time, it's quality of time, and just building that relationship and letting them know, hey, I want relationship with you, and I'm going to support you, and you might not be seeking that out from me so much right now, but I'm going to keep pursuing you.
That's right. Yeah. I think every parent wants to understand their kids better. And it seems like just about the right time, just about the time we understand them and we feel, you know, good about where we're at in the current phase, they move to the next phase.
Yeah, no.
So you only have, you know, a certain amount of weeks with your child as a fifth grader, and then they're going to be a sixth grader and in middle school and, oh, hold on. But the good news is that we do have amazing resources. And that's what we want to partner with you. We want to be your biggest cheerleader. We're such fans of you. And so we want to help. So please know that our doors are always open. We would love to have coffee with you. We would love to, talk, chat on the phone, email, text, all of those things. But if you have questions or ideas, we'd love to chat with you.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're stepping in right now and maybe you're just thinking about parenting through the phases right now in fourth and fifth grade, don't think you've blown it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I've missed it. I didn't, whatever, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You know what? God's going to help you.
Yeah.
Just make up the time, and it's never too late to build relationship and be intentional.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today. Like we said, it's an honor and a privilege to partner with you in this parenting journey, and we will talk to you at the next phase.
We sure will.